Next item on the agenda is board member reports. Who would like to go first? Anyone have anything to report? I think Dr. Shuffle had an interesting trip, involved a landing on something floating in the middle of the ocean, perhaps.
Well, I was just going to say I had an opportunity to go to educators to see with the Navy, and it was, what?
Are you on?
I think I am.
Pull your mic down closer.
Educators to see with the Navy. It was a day of debriefing, and then flew us out to an aircraft carrier, 16 of us off the coast of California. And we're able to observe STEM jobs as the ship was functioning, and then came back and debriefed for another day. But making the point of high school graduation requirements and readiness for positions in the military and STEM, and how it relates to the guidelines that we have and other states have. So it was very interesting. Really appreciated the opportunity. As great examples of what the workforce needs and how our education system supports that.
Great.
Andrew, I've got a follow-up question. So I want to know what it's like landing on an aircraft carrier.
So it was a turboprop plane, and you're backwards, and there's no light. You can't see out the window, and so they go from 0 to 120 miles an hour in like 2 seconds. So it kind of leaves your soul back. And it's an arrested landing on a catapult launch, so it's very interesting just physically. It's kind of like a major carnival ride or something.
Yeah, exactly. That's an e-ticket ride, as they say.
Thank you.
Other reports? Pam?
Well, my only report is both Paul and I went to a school choice event, a kickoff for school choice week at the Thomas McLaren Charter School in Colorado Springs. What an amazing school that is. A classical liberal arts school, all the kids do orchestra. Eight through 12?
Yep, and all the kids do all the classes.
Yeah. Latin, it's amazing. That orchestra was unbelievable. But that was really fun. It was part of the kickoff for School Choice Week, and it was filmed, I think it was broadcast in Houston as well. So that was really fun.
Yeah. All the important people in Colorado Springs, all the celebrities were in Houston.
Yeah, Ted Cruz, Sheila Jackson Lee were in Houston.
Yeah, they had quite the lineup. Other reports? Vice Chair?
Well, while they were doing that, I was in Washington, D.C., the center of I don't know just what. I'm going.
Really
and it was cold, really, really cold. I went there to participate in a study session on rural schools and found it very interesting. We tend to forget how different we are in one state, the different states. There was a young woman from Arkansas on our panel, and she was talking about, well, we just force them to consolidate, and you get hung in Colorado. And then she said they close every district if it has less than five. They determined that 500 students was the ultimate, and if you get less than 500 students, they just close them up. So it was very interesting. Pretty much the same things. How do rural schools attract quality and keep quality teachers? I know in Mesa County, we're always accused of stealing the teachers that come to teach at DeBec or Mesa or somewhere. And then because it's very hard for them to attract quality teachers. We spent most of our time kind of identifying what we wanted to talk about and what we wanted to study. As we have mentioned many times, the issue of technology is hard for many of the rural schools, and how do we do a better job of that? And it was a very interesting session. Going back in March to find out all the answers. I wrote a brief report. Leanne is fixing it up for me and deciding how we'll distribute it. But when we do, be sure the board members get a copy of it, too.
Okay. Good.
Well, not Leanne. I'm sorry.
Janelle.
I'm going, she's looking
Leanne's
like.
Doing communications now.
No, Janelle's, I had a kind of a prepared press release that they sent, which she fixed up, and then I added what my comments on it, and we'll make sure you all get a copy of it. It was an interesting experience.
Elaine?
So, Marcia, you are going to D.C. in March?
just for the study session.
Not,
I'm not
for the
going
legislative,
for the legislative
just
one.
For the,
just,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I think four of us were back. The majority of the board was back at the NASB meeting, each for different reasons. We're all, and I was, I'm on the Government Affairs Committee. But most important, everybody, is that it was at this meeting that our very own Jane Goff became president of NASB and assumed her duties. So here, here.
Congratulations.
So that's a big deal. Like, national, represents state boards from all over the country.
Thanks for keeping it clean. Just say that's a big deal.
Yeah. So congratulations, Jane.
Thank you very much.
It's going to be a great year, great year. And we had a great GAC meeting. We had really good speakers on the E-rate, on quality early childhood education. If people have looked at the agenda for March, you'll see that Secretary Arne Duncan is going to be the luncheon speaker. So if you all have some input or words you'd like the people that are going.
I think Arne Duncan would want to hear my words.
Yes, you never know. He's a pretty open guy. He's pretty open. But anyway, so I just wanted to make sure we highlighted Jane.
Okay. Angelica?
I'll try to be really quick since I changed my mind. I'm on the study group for deeper learning, and at this particular session we spent part of our time learning about the brain and what really makes you learn. When do you really learn? And the aha for almost all of us was we think that as we're studying, when we underline, when we take a lot of notes and reread them, when we read our materials, that that's how we learn more. And the reality is that it's when we're asked to retrieve what we've learned, that's the point at which we have the deeper learning, which suggests that assessments done right are critical to the deeper learning that we want for kids. And so the job before us is not to do away with testing, but is to figure out how do we, in collaboration with the classroom teacher, use assessments in a way that it creates that deeper learning that we're trying to create. This is why one of our criteria was performance assessments. It's because we wanted kids to be able to demonstrate and to retrieve what they had been learning in a real meaningful way. It was a really fantastic discussion.
That's great.
Excellent. So the next item on the agenda is public comment, but the first name on the list is apparently back out in the foyer. So I will give the ground rules while Busy grabs the list so I can call the name of the first person. We're very glad you're here. We enjoy the public comment section of our board meetings. Ground rules are 3 minutes. Because we have a large number of individuals signed up today and because this board has a commitment with the House Education Committee and the Senate Education Committee coming up right after this meeting, I'm going to move very quickly and I'm going to hold very firm to the 3-minute limit. I've got a little handy-dandy clock here. It's going to chime at you. You may finish your thought, but that's all you may finish when you hear the chime. Jessica Culbertson, please state your name and if you represent an organization, what the organization is before you begin. Thank you.
Sure.
Welcome, Jessica.
Thanks. Good afternoon, members of the board. My name is Jessica Cuthbertson, and I'm proud to call myself a 7th grade English language arts teacher from Aurora Public Schools and a teacher leader that is working with Colorado Education Association and the Center for Teaching Quality. I have been teaching adolescent literacy for over 10 years, and I've begun to think about my career in two segments: teaching and learning before the new Colorado academic standards and Common Core state standards, and teaching and learning after the new standards. And today I'd like to share a few before and after examples with you. And as I do so, I hope you'll ask yourself the question, in which reality, before or after, would I want my own child to be? So learning lesson design before the new standards. Before the new standards, I taught lessons that aimed to meet students' needs without a clear understanding of what was actually expected in any given grade level. Lesson design after the new standards, I still teach lessons based on individual student needs, but I now have a clear understanding of what seventh graders are supposed to know and be able to do, and how this differs from sixth graders and eighth graders. Assessment design before the core and Colorado academic standards. I used to assign on-demand writing texts that were decontextualized prompts to give my students practice opportunities for things like CSAP and TCAP. These prompts sounded something like, describe the perfect friend, or talk about a time you reached a personal goal. These prompts rarely gave me new information about my writers, but they did tell me if my students liked or hated the prompt. Assessment design after the new standards. Now I give my students contextualized prompts and projects that require reading, research, and critical thinking. For example, to launch this quarter's unit, the task we asked students to do was to explain and analyze Americans' First Amendment right and how this right differs around the world. Before they wrote their response, they were given the opportunity to read a primary source, an audio clip, an infographic, and an article on the subject. Then they were given time to craft their response. In contrast, this assessment task gave me lots of information about what my readers and writers could do. It told me if they could read to determine importance in a text, if they could compare information across sources and synthesize that information, and if they could think critically about a meaningful topic, the First Amendment, which I'm exercising here today. Learning before the standards. Before these standards, my literacy instruction existed in a vacuum. I had little time or opportunity to collaborate across grade levels or content areas. Since the new standards, this looks very different. I now have an entry point with my colleagues in other disciplines. The standards allow me to collaborate across school, district, and even state boundaries. Not only can I support my students in ELA class every day, but I can also teach them to read like a scientist or write like a historian with my colleagues. So I leave it to you to decide. Which classroom would better prepare your child for life after high school?
Thank you, Jessica. Stephanie Rossi. Perfect timing. You should be a broadcaster.
Good afternoon to board members. My name is Stephanie Rossi. I'm a social studies teacher in Jefferson County. I've taught for, this is my 33rd year teaching. I still believe I have the best job in the world. I find it quite fortuitous that I'm here today to have a conversation with all of you regarding Senate Bill 14-136. After reading through the bill, I was reminded of how my school year begins every year when sophomores enter my AP U.S. History class. They carry those college-level textbooks that many think will be better doorstops than actual textbooks. Their eyes are fixed and their fears palpable as they silently wonder, how can I ever read this book? How am I ever going to read this book? Just last week, I had three different conversations with students who wanted to opt out of my AP U.S. History course. The lamenting typically begins with comments like, the work is too hard, the reading is too hard to understand. Every year, I have a few students who would rather exit a challenging learning situation rather than learning how to persevere and adopt a self-defeatist attitude as the path they choose. I want them to believe they can do the job, and it's my job to get them there, and thus my job begins. Day one, I welcome students into an AP U.S. History course and acknowledge the courage it took for them to choose the challenging task. You accepted the challenge of taking an AP course, and I will help you develop the skills to succeed. They'll be reading a college-level textbook for the first time, and I will be teaching them how to access the material and comprehend it. I have the awesome task of challenging their assumptions about their own inadequacies and subsequently teaching them how to endure, to persevere, and to ask more questions, and to learn how to tackle a difficult course, a difficult book, and understand it. Teaching them to recognize that struggling to understand in a new learning is necessary, and in fact, a good thing to have happen. I want them to understand struggling is a good part of learning. Students are engaging their brain. Their synapses are firing in different ways. I don't want them to quit. I don't want them to transfer out. I don't want them to fail. And you know what? Those three kids stayed in my class. The Common Core Literacy Standards provide a vehicle that I can ground my teaching philosophy and best practices in. I often wonder if my students will be prepared to go into the workforce or college with the skills necessary to comprehend complex texts. Will they be armed with the skill set necessary to read and comprehend independently of a teacher, and furthermore be able to analyze, critically assess, and think about the material they will be reading? Standard objectives have always guided my instruction. My responsibility is to first assess their content knowledge and skill proficiency. My teaching is shaped around who they are, what they can do, and where they must end up. I want to guide them to not only academic success, but also help them develop an intrinsic voice that says, even when my learning gets tough, I have strategies I can use to figure them out, and the Common Core helps me and the students get there. You might think, of course, that it's supposed to go on an AP class, but that happens in all my classes. I encourage all students to take the AP class because all students will benefit. And those who don't choose to take an AP class, they endure the same encouraging, rigorous conversation. I use the Common Core Literacy Standards to guide my instruction in all of my classes because all students benefit from learning how to construct a well-thought-out argument, learning how to defend a historical position, and apply their learning to current events. constructing an essay, begin with an introduction, organize complex ideas and concepts, develop a position, use precise language, and end an essay with a provocative conclusion.
And that's a good end. Thank you very much. We're going to move Carrie over here, a seat or two, so people can see the time frame. Thank you very much. Angela Pera, and I typically let people go a little bit, but we have so many people today, I had to cut you off. I'm sorry.
Good afternoon. My name is Angela Pera, and I'm a 20-year veteran English teacher who's also worked as an instructional coach, a department manager, an instructional leader, a district content specialist, a college instructor, and I'm here today to advocate for the National Common Core Standards. When I left my seniors today, they were continuing their analysis of multiple texts which address similar themes in order to compare their approaches each author or artist takes, and they can explain that themselves too. They've read The Myth of Prometheus, Frankenstein, a college textbook excerpt defining the elements of romantic literature, Byron's Prometheus, and have viewed Rubin's Prometheus Bound. As a matter of fact, they'll be listening to Bach's Symphony No. 3, in which the composer tells the story of Prometheus. They've been reading these texts to evaluate how each version interprets the Prometheus myth and why the authors would use them. They will write an argument in which their claim will be developed using appropriate evidence and elaboration, and they do this in discussion as well. This is not an atypical day in my classroom. This is a typical day. Last week, those same students conducted a Socratic discussion on the recurring patterns or motifs they had begun to notice while reading Frankenstein and making predictions about how Shelley uses these devices to communicate meaning. They pose questions of one another to clarify and deepen their understanding and make connections to prior texts we've read in class, as well as to their own lives. They discussed without my intervention or cueing for 95 minutes. I've yet to tell them what they must think, nor were the texts stipulated by the Common Core. The standards have been said to devalue literature, that the reading of informational texts requires no critical thinking, as they merely state exactly what the authors mean, and I beg to differ. In my classroom, I have a wide variety of students. Some are strong readers and writers, scoring above college readiness level on the ACT. Others are at or below this score. Some have secure, supportive homes where they are nurtured and encouraged to do their best. Others are homeless or on the free and reduced programs. Some have IEPs or ILPs, others have ALPs. Some plan to go to community or trade schools, others to four-year colleges, and a few have signed up for the military. They all are challenged to achieve a high degree of rigor in my class. My classroom is not watered down. The standards are not watered down. It does not set me or my department or my school to be politically correct. We're not told which text to choose and to teach. We are able to choose based on the rigor that's necessary to move all students in our classroom. These standards challenge students to think and write at a critical level. Maybe that's the real concern. My students are not test subjects to be incubated in my Colorado classroom. My students are not science projects. My students are not test subjects. They are deserving of a future and a good education. Thank you.
Thank you, Angela. Isabella Wojtek? No? Okay. Bob Wood, it looks like. Bob Wood? No? Shelby Edwards? I guess you get 9 minutes then. No, I'm kidding.
Good afternoon, Chair and members of the State Board of Education. My name is Shelby Edwards. I am the Senior Education Fellow at the Colorado Children's Campaign. Thank you for allowing me the time today to urge your continued support of the Colorado Academic Standards, as well as setting high expectations for Colorado students. Although I believe you are all familiar with the Children's Campaign, just a brief background, we are a statewide, nonprofit, nonpartisan research and advocacy organization which for the past 28 years, we have been working to improve the well-being of Colorado children across the state. We are an independent organization that relies on data and research to guide our efforts. We also have one guiding question, which is, what is best for kids? So we often say at the Children's Campaign, what gets measured gets changed. It is through thoughtful, reliable, and consistent data that we are able to address the most pressing needs for children across our state. Looking at our statewide data on achievement, there are some things that need to change. A third of Colorado fourth graders were not reading at grade level in 2013. Nearly one in four Colorado high school students do not graduate on time. Less than a quarter of Colorado students met the 2011 ACT college readiness standards in all four core subjects. Too many of our kids are not getting the quality education that they deserve. The Children's Campaign supports the newly implemented Colorado academic standards because they are designed to provide our students with those 21st century learning skills, problem solving, creative thinking, real world application skills that are needed for success. The new standards provide students, teachers, and parents a clear understanding of what students are expected to learn at every grade level. This serves as a roadmap for a quality education. And we really believe that this will yield greater outcomes for kids because the standards provide consistent, high-quality expectations for all students, regardless of where in Colorado that they live. Through these consistent standards and expectations, we are able to better identify struggling students, better provide them with the interventions and the supports that they need to ensure their success. We are constantly making strides to improve education, and we appreciate the support of the State Board of Education. We know, however, that there is more to be done, and we support this implementation and ask for your continued support as well. Colorado has been developing these higher standards since 2008 in a collaborative effort, and every school across the state has been implementing these standards this school year. So it's not time to turn around. It's time to continue our efforts in improving education in Colorado. Thank you.
Nearly 9 minutes. You have 8 seconds to go. Terry Whitney.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the board. I just wanted to take a moment to make sure that you are aware that yesterday your communications folks issued a press release that had to do with the 10th annual AP report to the nation. We have met with the commissioner's staff and gone over this report as well as the state supplement. But if any of you would like to personally have that information, I'd be happy to give it to you. I do want to just share a couple metrics within the report that I think are very important. In May 2013, Colorado public and private high school students took a total of 40,285 AP exams that resulted in scores of 3, 4, or 5. Based on students' opportunity to earn at least three college credits for each AP exam score of 3 or higher, this represented an estimated 120,855 college credits. At an average rate of $303.20 per credit hour, the total potential cost savings for the state students and families was $36,643,236. So I just wanted to share that information with you in terms of the value that AP has for students and families in the state. Thank you.
Thank you, Terry. Maureen Welsh. No Maureen Welsh. Maureen Welsh going once, twice. Abby, it looks like we've got a schedule change here. Ilana Spielberg wants to go first. Ilana.
Thank you. Members of the State Board, Chair Lundeen and Commissioner Hammond, thank you for the opportunity to comment on your assessment plan and the PARC tests. My name is Ilana Spiegel. I'm the parent of four children in the Cherry Creek School District, one in high school, one in middle school, a fifth grader, and a first grader. I'm here this afternoon as a founding member of Speak for Cherry Creek, a grassroots group of supportive parents, educators, and kids that is growing across the state. I have been meeting regularly with Democrats and Republicans across the street at the Capitol about my concerns regarding PARC and high-stakes standardized tests. I have been told, for what it's worth, that we are not the crazies and that I should let you know that I am a Democrat. Parents, educators, and kids, not just in Cherry Creek, are tired of the over-the-top approach to assessment in Colorado. To provide context for my comments and those that follow, in my other life, I have been an educator and an education writer. I came to education via an economics major at Wellesley College in Massachusetts. I have a master's in education from Teachers College at Columbia University. I've taught public and private school in both New York City and the suburbs. I helped develop some of the first standards in New York State. For the 15 years, I worked as a staff developer at the Public Education and Business Coalition here in Denver. My work for the PEBC provided me with opportunities to work in urban, suburban, and rural districts in Colorado and around the country. For the past year and a half, I have written for EdNews Parent and Heinemann Educational Publishing about education and education reform. I share my resume with you today to let you know that I am not just a parent voicing a fear or concern. I have a background in economics and statistics. I have taught, I've consulted around the country. And I have watched firsthand what is happening in the name of education reform, not just in other parts of the country, but in districts around our state. I somewhat reluctantly took on this role of educational activist because of the groundswell of concern surrounding PARC and high-stakes standardized tests. I appreciate the comments many of you made this morning regarding the need to get a handle on the pushback around assessment. I would respectfully disagree, however, that all people need is more communication. We are here today because we are informed and we are concerned for the education not just of our children, but all public school children in Colorado. You may or may not have seen the Colorado Superintendent's letter that was delivered to the Capitol yesterday, expressing a statewide dissatisfaction with the use of the negative factor in inadequate school funding. PARC and high-stakes standardized tests are one-size-fits-all, unfunded mandates that contribute to the size of the negative factor. In addition, contrary to the published assessment calendars and reports, like the one circulating from Teach Plus that look only at minutes spent testing, I would argue that the culture in our schools is moved away from teaching and learning, creativity and innovation, to testing, data, and punishment. We are here today as adults who are uncomfortable with change. We are here to express our grave concerns with the changes that have been legislated and are going forward.
And thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. And I'll leave the letter in case you have a
thank you very much. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Abby and thank you. Abby and Ethan Goldsmith, now you're Abby and Ethan together? Or?
I'm solo today.
Okay.
So Ethan's at school in class right now. Thank you, members of the board, for having me here today. Hello, my name is Abby Goldsmith. I live in Greenwood Village, and I'm here as a part of the grassroots group Speak for Cherry Creek. I'm a business owner, and I currently serve on our district special education advisory committee. I have three boys. One is in ninth grade, one is in seventh, and the other is in fourth. Two of my boys have IEPs, and one is on a 504. As a mom, my position on the adoption of the PARC test for language arts and math and the addition of required testing in science and social studies is a continuation of ineffective education reforms that hurt children with disabilities. Please help me understand how raising this bar higher to establish a new baseline is going to help my children who already struggle in school. Help me understand so that I can help them believe that they can succeed. I would like you to hear firsthand how the over-the-top approach to assessment feels as a student with disability. These are the words of my son, who is in school. Hello, my name is Ethan Sewald. I am 15 years old and a freshman at Cherry Creek High School. I am dyslexic, and I have an IEP that includes many accommodations to help level the playing field academically. I am concerned about the PARC test because of the stress that this adds to my life, the interruption to my education, and the failure that these tests assume to know who I am. School has always challenged me, but I am lucky to be a student at Cherry Creek High School. I have great friends and amazing teachers all around me, but things change this time of year when we are all gearing up for these big tests. Even though PARC and the current assessments do not directly affect my GPA, the stress that I feel from beginning preparing through the end is horrible. The teachers are equally stressed and constantly drill into us that we must do our best. My teachers are great, dedicated people that I know they love what they do most days. Still, there is just as much pressure for me to do well on these standardized tests as I'm expected to do on my final exams. I feel that if I don't do my very best on these tests, I will never succeed in life. It's embarrassing. It's easy for me to get wrapped up in all this mindset, and I feel like I'm getting set up for failure. These tests interfere with the flow of my classes. I now have my driving permit, and I love driving all over town running errands. I understand the traffic laws, and now I'm learning all sorts of new skills, driving at night, during rush hour, and in the snow. I always have to keep my eyes on the road and be aware of my surroundings. When I first get into the car, there is some adjusting I have to do to prepare for the ride. But after the first mile, I hit my groove. The standardized tests, for me, are like having to stop in the middle of the road at an invisible stoplight. The momentum of my drive is suddenly stopped, and it takes a lot of work to pick back up to get where I was rolling along before. During this block of days, during the testing at school, my regular classroom education is stopped, which I cannot afford. These tests are taken over several days, and even longer if I choose to use the extended time that I qualify for in my IEP.
Summary thought, quickly.
I asked Ethan what he would like you to know about him, and this is what he said. He said, I am dyslexic. I am eager to learn. I am smart. I am capable. I am not a test.
Thank you very much. Michael Mazendo.
Good afternoon, State Board of Education. Thank you. My name is Michael Mazenko. I'm an educator of 20 years in both the United States and abroad in Southeast Asia, in both public schools and in private. And I'm here to assert that Colorado should withdraw from the PARC Consortium until the state has a chance to publicly review, evaluate, and critique Common Core standards and PARC testing. Other options include putting a moratorium for at least a year on standardized testing, continuing with the TCAP, or contracting with ACT, whose new Aspire program is aligned with state standards and college readiness measures and is available for grades 3 through 11. The problem with PARC is that it is an unproven standardized test created by a private consortium that has provided very little information or transparency on what their tests look like. I know what a TCAP looks like. I know what an AP test looks like. I know what an ACT test looks like. I have no idea, other than a few samples, what a PARC test looked like. While people are confident about established tests like the ACT, no one knows if PARC questions or scores mean anything at all. While proponents argue that PARC offers a more rigorous test of critical thinking, there is no comparison by which to make that claim. ACT scores are one of the primary measures Colorado uses to rate schools, and colleges actually trust and care about what ACT reveals. No college intends to use PARC tests. In the fall, roughly 60% of adults had little to no understanding of Common Core or PARC. And it's foolish to proceed with implementation before the parties all involved fully understand. The reality necessitates a time out. While 45 states adopted Common Core standards, as many as 17 are now doubtful. If that's the case and states are bailing out of the PARC consortium, then Colorado should certainly not accept the role of guinea pig for an unproven test from an organization with serious transparency issues. Piloting the test this year for implementation next year is irresponsible. The people of Colorado need time publicly to review the tests, the results, and any conclusions drawn from the data. The problem with PARC is that it is a high-stakes test by an entity that has no track record, no transparency, and no connection to Colorado. Numerous states agree. Kentucky, the first state to fully implement Common Core, has withdrawn from PARC, following Massachusetts, Florida, Oklahoma, Utah, Alaska, Kansas, Pennsylvania, Georgia, and Alabama, all who have withdrawn from testing consortiums and are pursuing alternative tests. Additionally, the extent of testing under PARC is excessive. At the high school level, as many as 10 to 15 days could be lost due to testing. What does that say about how we value classroom instruction? We put great faith in tests like the ACT, SAT, AP, the GRE, the NAEP, and internationally, the TIMSS and PISA, all tests which take less than a day, and we have drawn great conclusions from them, and we put great faith in them. So there's no reason for excessive testing. I'm the parent of two high-achieving children. I accept the TCAP, and I would put my faith in the ACT. But if Colorado goes ahead with PARC testing, a test for which I have little faith, I would seriously consider opting my children out.
Thank you, Michael. Paul Strollinger.
Paul Strollinger.
Th-
thank you very much for the opportunity to speak. My name is Paul Trollinger. I'm here as an educator representing SPEAK for Cherry Creek. I'm also the math department chairman of Cherry Creek High School. First, I want to make clear that I am not against assessment, and I'm not against accountability. I am for assessment and accountability. Assessment and accountability that makes sense and are aligned with the best interests of the students, something that Park fails to do. We have spent a great deal of time and energy learning about and implementing the Common Core standards and getting ready for Park. We have not sat by idly hoping this would go away. We've been very proactive as a school on this. What we have found during this process is extremely troubling. Students are not prepared to take Park because they lack the requisite background. Park assumes a K through 12 background, not only in various concepts at grade level, but in also what's called the standards for math practice. Thus, we have instituted a system whereby teachers are frantically trying to fill in the gaps of students, all the while teaching them material they should be learning this year. The result of this has been a tremendous increase in frustration for all parties and students who once enjoyed math and now hate it. I'm afraid that we have lost the trust of an entire group of kids who are currently taking Algebra 1, all in the name of getting ready for an unproven and controversial assessment. And what is the message that we have sent these kids as we are frantically trying to prepare them? You do not measure up. We're trying to fix you. What a harmful educational model. In addition, the Park test has not been released, something that Mike Mazenko talked about. Once we get a sample test, what choice do teachers have for the next year but to teach to the test? What a terrible educational model. Lastly, the Park test provides absolutely zero added value to the student in their educational career. This test isn't being mandated by colleges. Students have no interest in taking this test, especially the end-of-the-year Park assessment that conflicts with AP exams, something that that gentleman just reported how successful Colorado has been. What will happen? A large percentage of kids will be opted out of Park, and the rest who manage to take the test will have little incentive to do so. It is misguided to believe that this test will yield any valid data whatsoever. Cherry Creek High School is one of the flagship schools in the state of Colorado. Our community takes education seriously, and our students perform well on assessments, especially those that make sense. In my opinion, Park does not even come close. Why spend the money on a test that is very controversial? It's not aligned with the student's preparation to date, almost certain to yield poor results, not a benefit to the student's educational career, and takes significant amount of educational time away from the classroom. This would be a colossal waste of time and money. There has to be a better assessment model that works for all parties involved, especially the students. Thank you.
Kelly Jared. Kelly Jared.
I'm hearing you. Thank you for allowing me to speak today. This is Isabella Gray. She's my granddaughter. Maybe highly inappropriate to bring her to this meeting, but she's undoubtedly the cutest one in the room. So she gets I have many things to say to you guys. I know you've been listening all day. You've been talking about this all day. And if you are human like me, it's starting to sound like a bunch of mush. But I do want to say that I'm concerned about the testing levels. My daughter is now on staff at NJC, which is Northern Junior College in Sterling. She spent 5 years in college to pass her 4 years because she doesn't test well. Thank God she had professors, teachers all through school that recognized that she was not a good tester, but in fact had the knowledge and was helped through those testing processes. She was able to get A's and above on all of her grading. What's happening with the testing now is not capable of providing that kind of leeway for kids who are absolutely capable of going further. I also want to say that my son, who's 23 years old, is a pilot in the United States Army, and he's a warrant officer. And if you know anything, which I'm sure you do, that is unheard of. He did that because of help, not in the education system. Kiowa Schools left him far behind. We had to do a lot to get him where he's at. I'm not saying that education reform isn't important. I believe that it is. I think that we have far to go in our education system. But I'm not sure that the federal government is the one to be in charge of that. We are a state. We are not a federal republic. And so I'm asking you to, since you are the ones that get to make the decisions about what the people are saying, I'm asking you that the accountability at the end of this is yours. And so I'm asking you to look at all the levels with this program. Seems like it's got so many tiers to it. I've been studying this for so long, and I feel like I know nothing about it. So I'm asking you to not allow money and interests to determine what's going to happen with the education of our children, your grandchildren, but please allow parents and teachers to be the people who are setting the standards and not the federal government. That's all I have to say, and I am asking you, please, to be considerate of the fact that the people have asked you to allow for this to happen. We don't want Common Core, and we recognize that there are steps to all of this. I'm asking you, and I thank you.
Thank you. Melissa Scully. Melissa Scully.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
And thank you for your time. I appreciate it. My name is Melissa Scully. I'm a resident of Greenwood Village and a parent of three young children, ages 4, 6, and 8. When it came time for us to enroll our oldest child in kindergarten, we researched a variety of public and private school options and then specifically chose to move to the Cherry Creek School District because we felt it would offer our children a phenomenal education. My husband and I are proud products of the public school system and have had every opportunity for success due to that education. And we believe in the importance and value of strong public schools. I'm here today because I'm alarmed by what I see happening in our great public schools. Because my children are still quite young, we have not yet been exposed to the inordinate amount of testing that's now the norm. This year, my daughter, who's in second grade, started taking MAPS testing for the first time. That's three times a year. She spends her entire media class taking MAPS testing for up to an entire week. That's about 50% of her media class time during a school year. I was shocked to learn that next year I should expect her to lose 15 to 20 days of classroom instruction to be taking standardized tests, the majority of which will come at an incredible cost in actual dollars spent in administration, in loss of instructional time, in more time spent teaching to the test, and a loss of a joy of learning and an opportunity to engage in creative learning and an increase in student stress levels. I like to think I'm a good parent because I limit the amount of time that my kids spend in front of the computers and other screen time. But now, kids are going to be expected to be expert keyboarders and technology users just to be able to demonstrate the knowledge that they have. In many ways, these new tests are more a test of a child's technology skills than they are of just a child's knowledge. And especially when we think about those young learners, those third, fourth, and fifth graders, to expect them to be highly proficient at keyboarding, where's that instructional time going to come from just to prepare them to be able to take the test to show what they know? I'm not saying there's no place for assessment. Clearly, there's a role for responsible assessment. But PARC testing takes us farther down a path of over-assessment of our children. And it's not too late for us to say that this is wrong, and it's bad for our kids, and it's bad for our schools. I used to work in market research for a very successful Fortune 500 company before I became a mom. And before we launched anything new, whether it was the smallest product upgrade or a brand new product, we spent just countless hours and dollars spent on qualitative and quantitative research to determine first whether people would want it, and second, whether it would work in the way that we thought it would. So let me ask you this. Where is the data that PARC testing is effective, and where is the data that it's good for our schools and good for our children? I haven't seen that data, and I have spent a lot of time researching this, and the majority of the data I've seen shows that it's harmful. So I ask you, please help us withdraw from PARC immediately and find a better way to test our children. Thank you.
John Bott. John Bott.
Members of the Board of Education, my name is Don Bott. I'm a retired teacher from Cherry Creek Schools. Here on behalf of Speak for Cherry Creek, I'm presenting evidence why standardized tests hurt our children's education. First, standardized tests are biased. Recently in the Denver Post, Robert Zubrin pointed out that school ratings based on test scores directly correlate not to the quality of the staff or the ability of students, but simply to family income. Donald Orrich, a professor of Washington State University, found a 9.7 correlation between student test scores and parental income. One study finds that with every additional $20,000 of family income, student test scores rise. This is an indictment not of schools, but of the tests themselves. Test language is often ambiguous for students. For example, one item asks students to, quote, take a position, end quote, on a topic. One student seriously asked me if he should sit or stand. Many students are concrete thinkers, and test designers are unaware of students' developmental stages. Two, standardized tests are poor indicators of future success. According to Clifford Adelman, a U.S. Department of Education researcher, the main determiners for college success are the quality of students' high school courses and grade point average. In Paul Tuff's book, How Children Succeed, he concludes that, quote, grades are often better indicators of college success than standardized test scores. Three, tests affect instruction. One study of two schools found that test preparation and testing absorbed 19 school days in one district and a month and a half in another. A Harvard study underwritten by Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation found that, quote, heavily weighing a single measure may incentivize teachers to focus too narrowly, end quote. A Rand Corporation study concluded that tests cause, quote, teachers to focus on test preparation strategies in lieu of better teaching of the underlying content. To give an example of wasted time, last year at my school, a special needs coordinator was livid that she and her aides had to administer tests to students in wheelchairs, some with cerebral palsy, who struggled to communicate. By law, these students had to listen to each test question three times. Then aides would record no response and move to the next question. This went on for 3 days. Tests sap resources. Instead of creating effective lessons, teachers spend countless hours redesigning assessments so they resemble state tests. Some administrators' primary task is to coordinate the giving of tests. Substitutes are hired so teachers can proctor tests. President Obama has said, quote, one thing I never want to see happen are schools that are just teaching to the test, end quote. But because of SB 191, this is exactly what is happening. We've heard enough empty rhetoric about 21st century college and career readiness. Test taker is not a marketable skill.
Thank you. I believe Riley Farrow and Luke Ragland had spoken earlier today. Am I correct? Yes. Catherine Porter.
Good evening. Afternoon.
Almost evening.
My name is Catherine Porter. I'm here as a parent. My background is in special education, and that's the group that I'm here to advocate for today. And by the way, this is my first time testifying because Common Core is hurting our kids, and there's so many people that don't seem to realize this. And I want to remark that this is a bipartisan movement going on around the country, and this state doesn't seem to wake up and get that. Let me give you a couple examples. Dr. Gary Thompson, he's a clinical psychologist from Utah. He went over to Wisconsin to testify about the testing that they're doing there. And one of the things that he said in his testimony, he said, for 95% of my life, I voted for Democratic candidates. And there he was testifying against the assessments that they're using in Wisconsin. Ed Flint is an attorney representing a family in Utah regarding a case where the CC classroom is violating IDEA. This is what is said about him. He is so liberal that he makes President Obama look like Senator Mike Lee. We have Representative Brian Higgins from New York. I was listening to him on a radio show the other day. He said that he would support a pause on the Common Core. Again, another Democrat. And of course, you probably all know of Diane Ravitch, a Democrat adamantly opposed to Common Core. So I want to clarify that this is a bipartisan issue. And wherever you stand, please look at this for the kids, not the politics. So I want to talk about the impact on our special education students. Number one, these standards are copyrighted. So that means special education teachers have little freedom to help children, the most vulnerable population, our struggling learners, learn what they need to learn. Because it's copyrighted, they have to include 100% of those standards in their classroom, and they only have 15% freedom to help their students. They can add another 15%, but that's it. Otherwise, they're out of compliance. What are we doing to our special education teachers here? What happened to differentiated, individualized instruction as required by federal law? Ms. Berman, thank you. When for the testing, where are the peer reviews? Where are the validations based on professional standards? Where is the validity regarding our children with special needs? Maybe some of you have seen in the news some of the stories going on in Florida with the standardized testing, Ms. Goff. Have you heard about that? We have children who are blind, and they're taking standardized testing there, and they're asking these blind children, look at the pictures of these animals. Tell me which one is the monkey. How about the child with a G-tube that needs to be fed through his stomach? And the standardized test question says, tell me what a peach tastes like. What are we doing for these kids? This certainly isn't a measure of their intelligence. I have so much more to say. I don't have the time to say it. But I do want to get through to you that what we're doing to our kids on the special needs spectrum is deplorable. And so on their behalf, on our most vulnerable population, I implore you to support the pause on Common Core. Thank you.
Cherry Keister. Cherry? No, there you go.
Good afternoon, Board. Thank you for having us here. I hope that you're able to listen with your hearts and with your ears as well. A lot of the things I'm going to say are probably something I've said before, so I apologize if it's a repeat. Common Core is a very controversial issue, as witnessed by, not 25 anymore, 27 states that currently have legislation to delay or oppose Common Core. Additionally, now 18 states have entirely withdrawn from PARC or SBAC tests that are part of the mandated testing consortium, as you know. Seven United States senators have joined together to ask the U.S. Department of Education to repeal Common Core across our nation. I ask you, with those powerful numbers, does that not tell you this needs to be looked at? Senate Bill 136 is simple. It is not asking to not have Common Core. It is saying, take a break. How much does Common Core and PARC cost our state of Colorado? There has been no cost analysis, but estimates from Pioneer Institute are $231 million to implement for Colorado alone. That needs to be looked at, regardless of if this bill passes. That needs to be looked at. To review it, we need to take 1 year to review PARC and Common Core. That's all we're asking. Keep the current TCAP test. Keep the curriculum. You do not have to take away any work that schools have done to implement. However, I will say, some districts have implemented much differently than other districts. And you will find that if you look across the states. Some are better prepared. Some are still struggling, and they're going to be taking these CMAS tests, and they don't have anything in place because they don't know what's required. And I fear, and I think rightly so, that that will be what happens with PARC. And that is all this bill is asking, is for time and a cost review. States that have already piloted PARC tests have a long list of problems with the test, including multiple hurdles with the technology alone. Teachers are also saying the PARC questions are very ambiguous, the tests are too long, and children are simply giving up and timing out. A new study actually says that PARC widens the achievement gap, and I have sent that to you. And it is biased towards the wealthy, also what you have heard today. PARC mandates that all children take the test on computers, which require the districts to purchase these tests or the computers and the bandwidth for the computers. And because it's longer than TCAP, meaning it's going to be taking more time away from teaching, and it's going to be administered multiple times per year. I have a problem with that as a parent whose school teaches to this test, and we have started studying for TCAPs in January. I'm the parent that had the 147-page test prep packet sent home in spring break. I do not look forward to that multiple times a year with Park. The computers used for standardized test taking also will be collecting data. That has not been brought up here today, but I have a huge problem with not being able to opt my child out of getting data collected on him and shared and sold. Data is stored in a cloud, and there can be data breaches. And I'm
done.
Sorry. Please consider just taking a break. That's all we're asking. Please consider it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Amy Randall.
Hi, my name is Amy Randall.
Amy, excuse me.
It's okay. Everybody does it, even my grandparents.
I try to be exceptional.
It's okay. Thank you so much for the time to come and talk to you today. I really want to talk about trust. In 2010, a version of this board voted to adopt the Common Core State Standards, and the debate was hotly contested. I've listened to it a few times. It was so contested that the board received, I think it was 610 letters. 597 of those were against adopting the standards, and 12 were for it. I don't understand this. I really don't understand how this came into our state when there was so much opposition from the very beginning. That was an example of parents exercising their own local control over their own children and talking about how they want them raised, how they want them educated. It's been 5 years now that we've had legislation passed, one after another, that responds to the Race to the Top grant program. And we're seeing a culmination of all of these decisions. They were passed down to us from the U.S. Department of Ed, to the state, to our local districts. The local districts are tasked to enforce these, funded or not, popular enough. I'm a concerned parent, and every time I talk to a district, I am told the same thing. Local control is not under threat. But if that's true, why does our reform legislation in Colorado so clearly mirror legislation in Washington State, in New York State, in Kentucky, in Georgia, all the states? Why does my school district tell me things like, we value courses like driver's ed, but right now our budget priorities are elsewhere? Well, I sit in those meetings. The budget priorities are on assessments and teacher effectiveness. Somewhere there's a disconnect. Coloradoans all over sense it. Districts are literally falling apart under this. They know that there's dishonesty somewhere. They're blaming each other. They're fighting. I don't need to tell you about that, but it's painful to witness, I can tell you that. I submit that this dishonesty is coming from these state-led reforms that were implemented at the behest of the U.S. Department of Education. Our children are suffering while we fight this out. We adults fight this out, behaving like children. I really want high standards for our kids. My children attend a school that has the highest standards. My daughter is actually on a full ride scholarship because of those standards, and I'm a fan. I want that for every student in Colorado. But we need to take some time and step back and make sure that the reform that's on the table right now is really going to get us there. We need to know we can trust each other. We need to know we can trust our legislators, we need to know we can trust our administrators, and we need to know we can trust our educators. That's why SB 136 is so important right now. It's going to give us that time we need for civil discourse. Thank you.
Thank you. Stephanie Pico.
Hi, thank you. And my name is Stephanie Pico, and I am a testing coordinator for the Cherry Creek School District. I'm not here representing the school district. I'm here representing myself and my concern for the technical aspect of this test. I've been administering the MAPS test for the last 4 years in my school. It's an elementary school. And I can tell you that testing three times a year for all the kids from ages second grade to fifth grade is a very disruptive part of our day. But that said, that is a choice of our local school to do that test, and our teachers appreciate the information that they get from that test. We also, though, experience technical difficulties in administering this test on a daily basis. I had, even this January, in giving the test, I had to receive an email from NWEA, the administrative company for that test, saying we weren't allowed to test in a certain week because of the storms out east, and their system was overloaded because of all those kids trying to make up testing from the East Coast. So if this is going to happen on a regular basis with just NWEA, which is not as many children taking the test, I can't imagine that the PARC test can be ready for all of the students in the country to be taking the same test. We're supposed to take the CMAS test on April 14th. It starts the window. We have not received at our level in the schools any instruction on how we're actually supposed to administer this test and what parameters are necessary for the technology in order for it to work, how timing is going to be on the test, how many kids are going to be able to take the test at the same time with our systems in place in this classroom. We have the ability to give the test. I have confidence that the Cherry Creek School District is doing everything that they can to make it possible. But there will always be a technical aspect to this test that makes it very difficult for a teacher to proctor their own test without some type of support in the building. And there's no funding in Cherry Creek Schools even for a technician in an elementary school. I'm funded by our PTO. So it's a choice in our school to have somebody there to help out with technology. It's a local control issue for that. And it doesn't allow for the district that doesn't have the resources to apply that for every school in the district. We're fortunate. So I would ask you that you delay this test. Look and see how it does with the CMAS in April. We will know a lot of information about how that test actually produces itself in April when we do it. They're doing the field test now for PARC. We don't have any information on how that's even going to work or if it's even being processed. They haven't even told us how we're supposed to take care of the data that's leaving the building. So I'm just asking that you delay this so that we have the opportunity to make sure that the systems that are in place that will work and will support this testing environment, because it's a completely new environment for us. Thank you.
Laurel Ann Flavi.
Hello. Thank you for letting me talk today. And please excuse my nervousness. This is my first time to talk in front of you. And I'm scared about our future, and I know that it's in your hands. I'm here on behalf of my son, Samuel, who's a junior at Doherty. My son, Andrew, who is a freshman, and he's doing online school through D11. My son, Connor, and my daughter, Lale, who go to D49, the Rocky Mountain Classical Academy homeschool portion. And as you can see, I think that having the ability to look at each kid individually and educate each kid at their level and on their strengths and their weaknesses is vital to the kids all across the state. And I'm afraid with the implementation of the Common Core that we're going to look as we go forward in implementing this, that a lot of the freedom to educate kids on how they need to be educated is going to be taken away. I'm also here, my friend Misa Tran, who is a beauty queen, and she travels all over to speak about things, you know, in her state that are important. But she also is she travels across the country in dance and competitions, and they are the national champions in dance. And she's having to pull away from her work as a beauty queen and from her work in dance because of the stress that she's under. And her family is suffering because of the stress that they're under to try to meet the standards that are placed on them on the test. And she's no longer, my son, Samuel, feels like they're no longer being educated, trying to learn these other things to be tested on instead of learning the things that they're going to need when they go into the world to be a constructive community citizen. So I really appreciate you considering this pause bill to look at the implementation of Common Core in our community. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Natalie Adams.
Good afternoon. I'm Natalie Adams from Jefferson County. Thanks for the opportunity to speak with you today. I'd like to address two topics, student privacy and the PARC test. First, I'd like to address PARC. One can spend hours, even days, addressing all the flaws and problems of this PARC, as seen by all the people here today. However, I will just focus on one of the items that I recently became aware of, which is that students will not be allowed to have or use any paper or pencil with them while taking this test. All work has to be done on the online notebook attached to the test. I discovered this at a recent school accountability meeting and was completely shocked. My husband's an engineer. He works with other talented engineers who develop complex software systems. Do they do this all on a computer? No. They spend hours around whiteboards developing the systems, working out problems. To think that writing things out is going to the wayside, I would say, is very ignorant. I will, though, not try to debate you on whether typing or writing is better for learning, but it is an indisputable fact that there is a difference in how one's brain processes information depending on whether you are typing or writing. Frank Wilson, a well-respected neurologist and author, has stated that any theory of human intelligence which ignores the interdependence of hand and brain function, the historical origins of that, or the impact of that history on the developmental dynamics of modern humans is grossly misleading and sterile. Whether you believe that students learn better one way or another is a moot point. You cannot argue that the fact that children are individuals who learn and process information differently. Now, however, we are forcing children into an even narrower box by essentially penalizing children who learn better by working things out on paper. If you want them to click the correct answer on a computer or type out an essay, fine. But how do you justify not letting them have real paper and pencil to work out problems or to organize their thoughts for an essay? Children spend all day working out math problems on paper and drawing webs to organize their thoughts for essays. But now for our recent high-stakes tests we are tying teacher evaluations to and making many conclusions about our children from, students are being tested differently than how they learn every day in the classroom. What sense does this make? Of all the faults of PARC, this would be an easy one to rectify and by so doing acknowledge that our children are not robots and learn and process information differently. Second, I would like to address student privacy, which you will be discussing in detail tomorrow. CDE's information security and privacy policy is lacking in various ways, but one of the most glaring deficiencies in your policy is that you do not require parental permission to share personally identifiable information. Privacy experts around the country, including the ACLU, recognize the importance of requiring informed parental consent before you can share student records. The PowerPoint presentation that will be given tomorrow states that a school district shall not release the education records of a student to any person, agency, or organization without prior written consent of the parent or legal guardian of the student, except as provided by FERPA. However, in 2008 and again in 2011, the U.S. Department of Education changed the regulations in regards to FERPA, expanding the definition of school official and authorized representative, thus allowing highly personal data to be shared with just about anyone without parental consent.
Thank you. Cindy Will.
Hi, my name is Cindy Will, and I come with gifts in the form, two forms. I have prepared notebooks for each of you today, and I also have some apple pie sliced ready to go. If we could hand that out, I'd love for you to enjoy that, okay? It's been a long day, I'm sure. Again, my name is Cindy Will. I'm a co-developer of our Cursive First program that we use at James Irwin Charter Academy in Colorado Springs, where I'm also the principal. At our school, we have signs everywhere posted, what is best for students. This is our guiding light when we make decisions for staffing, curriculum, and policy. So I ask, what is best for Colorado students? My answer is for students to be literate for cursive writing. I'm very concerned about the cursive writing illiteracy that is fostered by Common Core. National Common Core standards lead to national assessments. National assessments lead to national curriculum. One of my concerns about Common Core is a required proficiency in keyboarding and emphasis on computer education and assessments. More and more schools and states are eliminating cursive writing. I participated on an NPR Wisconsin radio program discussing the elimination of cursive writing across the country. And at that time, 40 out of 50 states were getting rid of cursive because of the Common Core emphasis on keyboarding. Schools did not have time to teach both handwriting and keyboarding, so they switched to keyboard lessons to prepare students for the new computerized test. In so doing, are we contributing to the new form of illiteracy in America, cursive illiteracy? Elementary age students learn keyboard at the expense of cursive. What is the impact of cursive illiteracy on our citizenry? A key prosecuting witness in a nationally televised court case, Rachel Jean Tell, held some of the most critical information about the Trayvon Martin George Zimmerman murder case. When she was asked to read a letter she had signed and sent to the victim's mother, she finally admitted on national television, stunned everybody, "I cannot read cursive." Rachel is cursive illiterate. Rachel dictated and signed the letter that her friend wrote on her behalf. However, on national television, she went from superstar witness to train wreck. Why? She was considered untrustworthy based on her inability to read and write her own cursive letter. Another impact of cursive illiteracy on our citizenry is high school teachers and college professors are complaining more and more students entering classes cannot read what the professors are writing on the boards or the notes on their papers. They can't read cursive. They can't write cursive. They can't read the primary source of the historical documents like the Declaration of Independence, which I included in the folder too. And we have kids standing with pictures in front of them. Remember, the neuroscience of learning concludes that the writing by hand engages the brain. Dr. Virginia Berniger says students who learn to write by hand learn better. The finger movements from writing differs from typing. They activate the large regions in the brain, and they actually close the circuits between the right and left hemisphere, which helps the development of language and working memory and thinking. In conclusion, we need reliable assessments, and the computerized assessments are far from the paper and pencil that kids are writing with and learning with every single day. Please do what's best for students in Colorado. Pull out of the Common Core Consortium Assessment Please pull out of the Common Core Assessment Consortium, and if we're not able to do that right now, let's give it a pause, and let's vote on Senate Bill 136 until we can do so. Thank you.
Liz Richard.
Hi, thank you for having me today. My name is Liz Richard. I've been in education for 27 years. Of my 27 years, I've served 16 years in the classroom, 11 as an administrator, and my last 5 as principal of Monument Academy in Lewis Palmer School District, 38. Lewis Palmer is the highest performing school district in the state of Colorado and the lowest dropout rate in the state of Colorado, and they did all that without Common Core or Park assessments. My passion is education, and daily I carefully weigh important decisions, knowing the impact they will make on individual lives. It's causing tremendous concern to watch my ability and other educators in our state slowly losing their privilege to choose what is best for our own children. In 1965, the Elementary and Secondary Education Act said nothing in this act shall authorize any federal office to mandate, direct, or control schools' curriculums. In 1970, the General Education Provision Act stipulated that no provision of any applicable program shall be construed to authorize any federal agency or official to exercise any direction, supervision, or control over curriculum, program of instruction, or selection of instructional materials by any school system. And then in 1979, federal law creating the Education Department forbids it from exercising any direction, supervision, or control over the curriculum or program of instruction of any school system. It was later amended to say, no Education Department funds. Imagine that. May be used to endorse, approve, or sanction any curriculum designed to be used in grades K through 12. The Common Core standards are forcing a standardized conformity in instructional methods and materials and completing the spectrum by adding national assessments. This goes against local control of district and school boards to decide what is best for our students. The parents and dedicated professionals who invest their lives into children's education are the ones best equipped to make standard-based and curriculum decisions for our Colorado students. We furthermore are best equipped to assess them, to interpret the data and to differentiate the instruction and curriculum-based decisions for their performance and to better their performance. No one in Washington, D.C. has the ability to help those who are struggling in my school in Monument, Colorado. How did we get here so fast? It happened by a vote taken in haste in December of 2012, with the Common Core standards not even released to re-educators until April of 2013. The only bargaining chip on the table was the promised race to the top money from the 2009 stimulus. 45 states embraced the initiative. Since that time, 17 states have now called a halt. I'm asking that the State Board of Education give the control of Colorado's children's education back into the hands of educators in our state. Thank you.
Thank you. Wesley Jolly.
Good afternoon. My name is Wes Jolly, and I serve as the Director of Academic Services at the Classical Academy Public Charter School in Colorado Springs, the largest charter school in the state of Colorado with approximately 3,500 students and one of the top performing schools in the state. It is a distinct pleasure to be able to address you today as an educator concerned about the impending impact of Common Core implementation upon schools within Colorado. First, let me be clear. Our charter school does not fear standards or testing, and we have proven that fact in the results our seven schools have achieved during our 17-year existence. We do not view the issue in political terms, but rather in the terms of what is best for our children. My goal today is to cover the highlights in just one area of significance, the testing methodology and its impact on our schools. Technology and pedagogical concerns are major elements of our opposition to the implementation methodology of the Common Core. The cost for charter schools especially will be substantial when considering hardware, professional development, maintenance, and future upgrades. Such unfunded costs will be a significant burden to our schools and will funnel money from the educational choices we deem locally appropriate. We have significant concerns regarding testing implementation, especially in the lower elementary grades. The mandated technology use for assessments will cause a significant departure pedagogically for classically oriented schools. Lindsay Layton, writing in the Washington Post, noted that keyboarding for kindergarten students is sending tremors through the nation's elementary schools. We believe students should be tested in the same manner in which they are instructed. For most elementary schools, that involves pencil and paper testing, not computerized assessments. Pushing technology earlier, even into kindergarten, is not developmentally appropriate, in our opinion. Yes, technology is a significant influence in our world today, but that does not mean we need to start keyboarding so young. There is enough time to prepare students for such skills later at more developmentally appropriate age. The impact on instructional time of the new assessment regimen is also of significant concern. While the overall average testing time per grade level is fairly consistent between the old and new testing criteria, the computer assessment methodology will dramatically impact scheduling. Grade levels will not be able to all test on the same day as in the past. Overall, the time away from normal classroom instruction will be of greater impact than indicated by the total testing hours due to the constraints caused by the technology piece. Adjustments are being made in schools to account for the increased testing time needed from March to May of the school year. Is this the way that we want to proceed just for the convenience of computerization, which many are starting to realize will not have the quick turnaround on results as has been projected? Ultimately, it is our belief that content standards at a national level will drive conformity instead of innovation and mediocrity instead of excellence. We as a state can do better. Common Core's implementation assessment strategy ultimately would prove detrimental to the goals we should be pursuing as a state, and we therefore urge our officials to alter the path upon which we are journeying. The future of our kids depends upon it. Thank you.
Thank you. Deborah Seal, I believe it's Seal. Deborah Seal? No? Having a little difficulty reading this. Deborah Seal? No? You're not Deborah Seal. I know. You could be Cole. I'm sorry.
Don't worry. That's not what you're talking.
I am.
Mr. Chairman and the board, my name is Deborah Cole.
and I am a founder of Cheyenne Mountain Charter Academy in Colorado Springs, and a longtime consultant with James Irwin Charter Schools, also in the Springs. Today, I would like to address the board on a subject that has not been brought up that I'm aware of, the subject of STEM and the Common Core. One of the stated goals of the Race to the Top is to promote science, technology, engineering, and mathematics proficiency in our students. But there's a paradox at the heart of this goal, because in fact, the Common Core standards in math, which undergird all the other disciplines of the STEM spectrum, are likely to reduce the flow of students through the STEM pipeline and depress the rigor of STEM instruction along the secondary and post-secondary continuum. Here's why. The Common Core math standards top out at an Algebra 2 level, and a relatively weak Algebra 2 at that, because some standard Algebra 2 topics are omitted. It's a fact that a high school student who graduates with this level of math under her belt is virtually precluded from pursuing a STEM major. The gap between where she is when she graduates high school and where she needs to be out the gate in college is simply too great. Although it can happen, the odds are daunting. Only one out of every 50 prospective STEM majors who begin their undergraduate math coursework at the pre-calculus level or lower will earn a bachelor's degree in a STEM area. For all the talk of rigor, the Common Core standards writers admit that the math standards are low. In 2010, Jason Zimba, a lead writer of the math standards, acknowledged that the standards are, quote, not for STEM. He added, it's not only not for STEM, it's not for selective colleges. He said, it's a minimal definition of college readiness. Professor James Milgram, the only actual mathematician on the validation committee of the Common Core standards, refused to sign off on them because he said math standards would not produce students who were college ready, as he understood the term. A further consequence of the mediocre Common Core math standards is that they will depress college standards as well. PARC consortium member states have agreed to exempt students who have passed a college and career ready exam as juniors from remedial classes in public universities. This is one way to solve the problem of so many high school graduates being placed in remedial classes in college, but it can hardly be described as raising the bar. Either underprepared college freshmen will now be receiving credit for courses that were previously deemed to be below college level, or without the option of non-credit-bearing bridge courses, they'll be placed in courses to advance for them, or they will not be able to take math in college, period. There are no other options. I cannot believe that this board will accept this scenario as good enough for Colorado students. Thank you.
Thank you. Elizabeth Berg. Elizabeth Berg.
Good afternoon, State Board of Education members, Mr. Chairman. My name is Elizabeth Berg. I'm principal at James Irwin Charter Elementary School. I've been there for 9 years. We have a broad demographic of students. There we have 42% free and reduced lunch, 57% minority students, and 79 of our 539 students qualify for English language services. Our students have shown achievement, accelerated achievement, and growth over the last 9 years with our core knowledge direct instruction school. James Irwin Charter Elementary School has received the John Irwin School of Excellence Award 3 times and 1 time the Governor's Award. We are a pencil-to-paper school, and we use a very active method of instruction that allows us to teach more in less time. Just showing a brief graphic. Is this okay? Can I do this? These are writing scores, fifth grade, for the last 3 years. The blue bar are our students. I do this not to tout anything for me, but the students. They have achieved at high levels. What is harder to teach than writing with all the complex mental activity involved with organization, the right word choice, syntactic, and grammatical expression? It is the most difficult topic that we do teach in elementary school. But we also, at James Irwin, we have carefully designed flexible performance groups in reading and math that meet between 60 to 90 minutes each day. Students in each grade level go to smaller groups in reading and math for differentiated instruction, providing scaffolded support and structure appropriate to their needs. These groups can be as small as 4 to 5 students, up to 15 students. Teachers and instructional assistants have rooms and curricula specifically assigned to them so that we can provide instruction that answers the guiding question, what's best for students? The way we teach more in less time, frequent responses, callbacks, and lively group responses. The scheduling of the proposed PARC tests will greatly interfere with instruction and continuity of both classroom subjects and our very successful differentiated reading and math groups. The schedule is cumbersome, disruptive, burdensome, and it will provide unreliable data for students who are taught pencil to paper. When we look at just the March PARC assessments alone, I have 3 third grade classes, 3 fourth grade, 3 fifth grade, 9 classes who each need to take 5 tests. That's 45 testing sessions. I cannot do it with our computer lab more than one session in the morning because you have to plan for that time to get there, the setup, practice questions as well. So from 8:30 to 10:30, we can have one test session for one class, 44 to go. But there's a problem, too, with the other 2 fourth grade classes. They can't have contact with these students. What I propose is a step forward in technology that all 240 of the students can start the test at the same time with a pencil, that we do not have the PARC testing. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Stephen Hatcher. Belinda Seville is on deck.
Thank you. My name is Steve Hatcher. I'm a parent. I would like to thank you for your service to the citizens of the great state of Colorado. As elected officials, each of you took an oath of office to uphold the Constitution of the United States as well as Colorado. The Common Core standards that were approved as a result of the bribery and bullying by President Obama and the U.S. Department of Education is a direct violation of the U.S. Constitution's 10th Amendment and multiple federal statutes. You accepted a bribe of additional funding through President Obama's stimulus package that required you to blindly accept the Common Core standards in its entirety, even though they were not written. Now, the state of Colorado and Department of Education defines bullying in House Bill 11-1254. In part says, bullying is prohibited against any student for any reason, including but not limited to any such behavior that is directed towards a student on the basis of his or her academic performance. Since the passage and implementation of this coerced and illegal policy, the Colorado State Board of Education has now become the bully. Let me tell you this: how this affects my family. My son is a ninth grader at Thunder Ridge High School. He's on an IEP for math. His IEP declared that he takes Algebra 1 over a 2-year period. I got a letter 2 weeks ago on January 21st saying, parents, Thunder Ridge will no longer be offering Algebra 1 Part 1 or Part 2 next year. Thanks, Mrs. Geyer. I do not take this lightly. This results in my son wasting 1 year of his math requirements for high school because his IEP plan is no longer valid. Why didn't the State Board of Education require all IEP plans to adhere to their mandated Common Core standards beginning this year? Could it be that you were afraid of the backlash for your illegal actions? I met with my son's IEP teacher, counselor, who's also his math teacher. She was very apologetic and apologized for it. She informed me that the new standards only allowed a student to be taught algebra over a 1-year period, and they had to be taught to the test, not the concepts. Sorry, I've lost my place. She apologized for the disservice to my son, and however, because of the actions of the Colorado State Board of Education, she must do what she is told, otherwise she may lose her job. My son's IEP was changed based on your mandates. I want you to tell me why you were forcing my son to be taught a test on Algebra 1 instead of the concepts. Now he will have to be taught at an accelerated pace for an IEP student, which defeats the IEP concept. You have set my son for failure, as well as stealing 1 year of math requirements from him. This is in direct contradiction to the U.S. Department of Education's No Child Left Behind policy that you no longer required to adhere to as part of the bribe to accept Common Core.
I request that you explain and apologize to my son in writing for your lack of concern for his education. It appears that some of you don't believe in the oath of office that you took. Your covert actions have violated my family and kept the citizens of Colorado in the dark until now. We will not stand by and allow illegal policies to be adopted by the people that were elected to represent us. Therefore, each and every one of you must examine your intentions for being in the office that you hold.
Summary thoughts, Stephen.
Okay, just a couple of sentences. If you cannot or will not adhere to the oath of office that you took, then I ask that you resign today or face potential recall. We will at least make sure that this is your last term of office in this position.
Belinda Seville. And thank you, Stephen.
Thank you.
And Angelique Matthews is on deck.
Did y'all get that apple pie? Oh, I think you should pass it out.
Oh, we've got another meeting we got to get to, so we're
going
to stay with
hurry.
The
I am brief hand. Today. Chairman, Commissioner, School Board, thank you for your time. My name is Belinda Seville. I am a former teacher both in the state of Texas and Connecticut. As I stand before you, I know we all share the same vision. The goal is for Colorado to operate within a vibrant and thriving educational reform that outperforms all other states. I believe it's imperative that we keep this in plain view with all decisions that come before this board. Recently, I contacted a longtime math teacher in Aurora. I asked him to comment on Common Core. Unfortunately, he did have to stay anonymous in his reply, but I have made copies for your reading. This closet evaluation is one reason why I'm asking you all to stand and support Senate Bill 136 in order to give schools, teachers, legislators, parents, and boards of education, all of whom were omitted from the validation committee, time to see if this is the vehicle to truly move Colorado to the top of the list academically. In business, we call it proof of concept, my husband reminds me. Let's evaluate before we implement something of this magnitude. To date, there has been no proof of concept for Common Core or PARC. Perhaps this year could give us the proof that we are all looking for. Thank you.
Thank you. Angelique Matthews. And Matt Pickering is on deck.
Good afternoon, board.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for allowing me to exercise my voice today. I'm going to recommend that we find another room next time because we're coming back with more people. I was born and raised in Johannesburg, South Africa, where people didn't have a voice. And I came to love this great country because of the protection and the rights that America puts on the individual. I understand the difficult position that you're in. You're in a very difficult position. I empathize with your position. You have parents on the one side who are angry. You have the federal government on the other side who's pushing their agenda. You have big money being pushed down your throats, and who wouldn't want to take it? I'd be just as uncomfortable as you probably are. I'm not going to go through my notes. I am against Common Core, but I'm not going to go through my notes. You've heard this entire room explain to you why we think this is a total disaster. But I am going to say to you, please look at me. Please look at me. I want to know that you're listening to me. You're the gatekeepers to our education. You are the people that we trust our kids to. You are the people who has our back. But if we can't trust you, where do we go? What do we do as parents who have a voice and are speaking out clearly in numbers? We're coming back next time with larger numbers. Not because we want to scare you, but we want our voice to be heard. Common Core needs to go.
Thank you. Matt Pickering.
I'm not finished, so Matt.
I'm sorry, you still have time.
That's okay. Thank you.
It was a good place.
I didn't know anything about Common Core up to about a month ago, and I came to the last board meeting not knowing a whole lot. I came to discover knowledge on Common Core. And then this last month, I've gone to meetings. I've discussed with teachers ad nauseum. I've spoken to parents. I've read through documents ad nauseum. And what I have discovered is shocking. How did it get through this far? How did we get this far down the road? How? I know you can't answer me. This is not that kind of forum. But I want to tell you, I am shocked at what I see. I come from a worldview, having grown up in South Africa, knowing that the government can do terrible things to people. I think Americans think that could never happen in their country. And so I want to just say to you, please, the federal government should not be in our education. Please support the Moms Bill. Please slow this thing down so we can be fiscally responsible, that we can be good stewards of what we've got, that we can investigate. This thing is unproven. Please support the Moms Bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Matt Pickering and Amanda Novak on deck. Matt Pickering. No Matt Pickering. Amanda Novak. And then Sheila Brown is behind Amanda Novak.
Good afternoon. My name is Amanda Kudra Novak, and I'm a ninth grade humanities teacher at West Generation Academy on the West Campus in Denver. First of all, I want to say that I was really lucky to have two of my former teachers here. Michael Mazenko is one of them at Cherry Creek High School. I was a 2007 grad, as well as student body president. And coming from Cherry Creek, I think I learned a lot. And one of the things I learned is that not everybody has the same opportunities. And quite frankly, I don't think that our standards are set high enough. And so I'm here to ask you to continue supporting Common Core. So a little bit more about me a little bit. So I came from Cherry Creek. I witnessed firsthand what I believe are standards that are varied, too varied, and create more of an achievement gap in our state, but also in our country as a whole. And I think Colorado in general has had standards that are too low. I have taught with the Common Core, and I've seen incredible growth in my classroom. I do have technology in our school, which is 98% Hispanic, as well as 98% of our students receive free and reduced lunch. Our ELL percentage is more than 50%. Most of our students are bilingual. Some of them are monolingual Spanish speakers. The growth we've seen is incredible. We do take tests online often, and we don't have the greatest bandwidth, but we somehow make it. We take tests about this STAR test, for instance, about four times a year. In my classroom, here's just a little snapshot of the growth that we've seen because we know our data and because our students are able to own their data. In my classroom, one of my classes has averaged 1.8 grade level growth in their reading and writing. That's just from August till now, 1.8 grade levels. I've moved five students to proficiency and six to partially proficient from unsatisfactory this year so far based on DPS interim tests. I do believe in the Common Core. I believe that it has really stepped up the game and that our students are focused on our skills and critical thinking rather than the prescribed knowledge that they've been given in the past. To say a little bit more about the, I quote, robust and relevant standards that are relevant to the real world, they are skills-based and critical thinking. My students run the classroom. They own it. We do lit circles, Socratic seminars. No longer are they just simply reading a book, talking about plot, talking about setting. But they're really talking about their experiences and how their lives are going to be affected by what we're learning. It's very experiential. So one thing I have to say about Common Core is it is not a common curriculum. However, it is a standard bar of excellence for our students. An example I wanted to give about my students, like I said, they run the classroom, they really own it. The student talk is incredible. Very little teacher talk, a lot of student talk. Just recently, Tom Boesberg came into my classroom, and he was able to listen to a Socratic seminar that we were having on To Kill a Mockingbird. My students, who are historically discriminated against, and by historically I mean every single day still discriminated against, were having a conversation about advocating for themselves and their family and their community based on the themes of To Kill a Mockingbird, including courage. And having that conversation was thanks, in my opinion, thanks to the Common Core and the freedom I have as a teacher to interpret those standards and set my kids at a higher bar. Thank you.
Thanks, Sheila.
Thank you. Are we going to applaud for everybody?
So I may have, I'm sorry, Amanda, Sheila, who, Amanda, did you just finish speaking?
Yes.
Okay. Sheila Brown, I'm sorry. Thank you.
Good afternoon, board. Thank you for letting me speak. I'm here. I'm a parent of three sons that I raised up in Jefferson County Schools in Arvada. I still have a son who's a freshman at Arvada High School, and I'm fully against Common Core. Everything that's been said here, I fully agree with, except the last person that just was here. Everything else, though, I totally agree with the expense, the unproven testing, and the data collection, which is clearly a violation of our Fourth Amendment right under the Constitution of the United States of America. Many teachers have already spoken out here in this room today, telling you how they're not even allowed to teach kids anymore. It's become a testing playground, and that's all they're doing is testing. That really disturbs me. But one thing I have not heard today, and I want to say that I'm also opposed to the dramatic changes that are going to take place in our curriculum. Reducing the classic literature and replacing it with informational government text, like the EPA handbooks, killing the love of reading in our children, completely just killing it, because who would want to read that? I mean, they're going to replace Moby Dick and Where the Red Fern Grows with an informational text on the EPA for our kids to read. I think that's appalling. And I am also here representing a teacher from Jefferson County who just recently, in the end of 2013, quit her job because of this testing, because of the excessive pressure that was put on her to just test. Her name is Andrea Gilmore, so I'm going to read her statement, and so just keep in mind this is not me. I'm reading for Andrea. I'm here today to share my story. I worked as an educator in Jeffco for 13 years. I believe in Jeffco and its vision with all of my heart. Like most teachers that I know, I worked my tail off to improve student achievement and to learn more myself so that I could individualize my instruction, making the content meaningful to each and every student sitting in front of me. And then one day something happened. I was no longer happy. I thought long and hard about why that was. After all, I was doing what I loved, and boy, did I have a talent for it. Well, I talked to other teachers in my building, and guess what? No one was happy. Every one of us was stressed out beyond belief. So many wonderful teachers wanting to leave the profession altogether, and probably would if they were not stuck. You see, they need para, and they need health insurance, and they don't want to lose their pensions. Many say to me, I just need my 20 years, and then I'm out of here. For many years, I stayed stuck. Well, that voice in my head, my conscience, began to bother me more and more. I was disgusted with all of it, sick of a new curriculum every other year, tired of new laws mandating more and more testing and more data collection. All I wanted to do was teach. All any teacher wants to do is teach. Public school teachers spend their days testing, collecting data, inputting data, and analyzing data. There is no time left for us to come up with a plan to change that data. That is insanity. The definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result. You ask any teacher and they will tell you new standards and a new assessment will not increase student achievement. A good teacher and good instructional practices are what will improve student achievement. And all of your good public school teachers are burning out and leaving. A year ago, I decided I couldn't do it anymore. I no longer believe that what I was doing was right. Not right for kids, not the right thing to do. I left the public school. I took a huge pay cut and I gave up my pension to teach at a local private school. She just finishes knowing, just saying that Common Core and PARC are not really about student achievement, and to say that they are is a lie.
Bernadine Ruiz.
My name is Bernadine Reese, and I come from a long line of, I'm a Denver native. My mother and my uncle were very instrumental in creating the Head Start program for kids, and very influential in the PTA meetings that we had in our Denver public schools. I am a Christian education, Bachelor of Arts in Christian Education person, and I was in charge of 12 Denver Public Middle Schools with the SOAR program. That was a $1.5 million grant that was given from the Denver Broncos when we came into Colorado a few years back, and it dealt with a lot of high-risk inner-city youth. I was also with the Parks and Recreation at Denver Elementary Schools, Columbine Elementary School, Barney Ford, Valverde, Schmidt. I was in charge of three rec centers, La Alma Park, La Alma, Harvey Park, and Montbello. I was the instructional designer for that program, and I have come through a lot of different oppositions. I think it's really important to know that what's happening right now and with this core, the core is not a good program, not a good fit for Denver. I do fully support Mom's Bill, SB 14136, and I think with the number of things that you've heard, I think it's very important that you slow down this process, that we can gather the information that we need. I am a Jefferson County teacher. I coached at Alameda Jefferson County and Columbine High School. I'm a Columbine graduate. I've been instrumental in helping youth in the private sector and public sector. I appreciate your positions here as the school board. This is the first time I've had an opportunity to speak to you. With the different things that are happening with this bill, I understand it to be just like the Obama Care bill that was pushed across the board before people knew everything that it was involved in it. Is kind of the same process I understand is happening here. And I'd like for you guys to just totally slow down this process. Take a look at everything that you have. Take a look at everything that people are saying, or parents are saying, or teachers are saying. And just know that I'm very community-oriented. I served as an election judge at the Denver Commission for over 10 years. I do everything that I can to help our kids. And I just appreciate your time in understanding that we do not support this program here, and we do support, and I'd like for you to take a look at SB 14136, the Mom's Bill, and just allow that to be supported. And I appreciate your time and your patience and your ability to listen to the folks in Denver in all of these school districts. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Jack Matthews. Jack Matthews.
Thank you, Board. Thank you for listening to me today. I know it's late, so I'll try to keep this as fast as I can. My name is Jack Matthews. I'm an individual, a business owner in the Denver area. My wife and I own and operate a scientific laboratory here in Denver, so we're interested in STEM students. That's primarily our goal. We're also interested, of course, in the well-being of Colorado since we live here. I unfortunately don't have any children, so I can't come to you as a parent. But as a future employer, hopefully, of some of the products of your school system, I am interested in what is going to take place in the future. We did not understand much about Common Core since we don't have kids in school. Obviously, the day-to-day school stuff we're not familiar with. However, we do have a lot of friends, thankfully, who have problems and issues with kids, and we try to be there to support our friends because kids are sometimes issues, right? Especially the teenagers. I was one of those. However, the thing that I'm most curious about is how our students are going to be trained and the methodologies used to teach them, primarily mathematics. Since that's a favorite of mine, I am a material scientist and a chemical engineer, so those things are near and dear to my heart. And so I just took a look to find out if I could help the students or the children of my friends, and if this was going Common Core and Park were going to be an issue for them, or if this was just kind of blown kind of, you know, out of proportion, as sometimes we can do, especially with social media nowadays. And in investigating the standard, as well as some of the assessment samples that were sent out, There were some concerns that I had that I thought were worth really evaluating. Primarily, what I would consider the disconnect between natural numbers and natural learning of numbers and some of the abstract or alternative methods for training addition, multiplication, things like the lattice process, which I know. I learned those things as well, but they were curiosities. They were not standard instruction for me. My instruction was basically based in Saxon. I think most of you are familiar with that particular rigor. But I'm also very fond of Singapore. I think that's also a very rigorous standard. But I am very concerned that the Common Core methods that are being used are going to leave our students, our future STEM students, with a severe disconnect. You and I think about the multiplication table, and we carry that around in our mind every day. I'm afraid that for them, that may not be a possibility because they're going to be carrying around a particular methodology in their mind. And that gives me reason for pause and concern. You might find a way around that, and that's fine if you do. But I'm concerned that those methodologies are endemic within the Common Core system. So I would like to ask you to consider two things. One, technology does not necessarily mean. Oh, my time is up. Let me skip to the last page.
Summary comment.
Here it is. I would ask you. My demand action, I guess, of the board is to write a craft and send a letter to the Colorado General Assembly, asking them to pause on PARC and asking them to stop Common Core, or at least for a year, until we can get public assessment. Thank you.
Thank you. So that is the end of the list of people who had signed up to speak. I know that Senator Marble had come into the room. I don't know whether she has an interest in speaking at all or no. Okay. But I would offer the opportunity for other individuals who are interested in speaking. If we could get another list going, it appears. We need to keep moving because, as I've said several times, we need to move on to another event. But, sir, if you'd state your... I'm not going to cut off public comment. How many people have the legislators will in fact be waiting for us. How many people would like to speak and have not spoken before? So we've got three or four that have not spoken before because people that have made the trip, I would like to give them an opportunity. Sir, we'll take the people who would like to speak have not spoken before. Okay, thank you.
Well, I know the time is late. My name is I appreciate it, State Board members, Commissioner Hammond. My name is Al Timothy. I'm a concerned citizen here to voice support for the Colorado Academic Standards, which this board passed a number of years ago, and the recent improvements that you made to them. I recently retired from Miller Coors Brewing Company after 30 years, where I served as Vice President of Public Affairs there. I can tell you that the business community as a whole understands both the moral and economic urgency to improve our public education system. It's the feeder system for our future workers and our customers. But I can also speak to a critical issue that probably needs more attention than it's getting. I'm not sure our state, a lot of our high school students in particular, are really taking note of the rapidly changing education-to-workforce pipeline. It used to be that a young person could graduate from high school and land a secure, well-paying job in the manufacturing field, a place like Miller Coors, without going to college or having the required technical training. Those days are pretty much gone. The manufacturing process is so technically advanced now, and as a result, the work environment relies on critical thinking and resourceful problem solving. The manufacturing jobs of today and tomorrow pay high wages, but also require high skills. So employers expect K-12 education to align with the knowledge and skills that our young people need to be ready for college and career in an increasingly competitive global economy. I see Colorado's recent adoption of higher academic standards as a crucial step in the right direction. It moves us towards a more rigorous and relevant way to educate our kids for the realities of the 21st century. I'd be remiss if I didn't acknowledge what I consider a grim reality. Your decision to adopt higher standards, which are aligned to Common Core, has unfortunately become the center of much controversy and acrimony. All of us know that many of the claims made about Colorado academic standards, they're Colorado academic standards, not federal standards. They're not brought to us by the federal government. You all develop these throughout the state. A lot of these claims are simply untrue. So the state board and all stakeholders, including the business community, have to help parents, students, teachers, and the general public really understand these new standards. We have to educate Coloradans about the importance, this important step in the right direction. Raising academic standards for students at every grade level is difficult, obviously. And the testing issue, I understand, is a tough one, but it's necessary to undertake, and here's why. Last comment. In business, there is a fundamental principle that says what gets measured gets done. It's accountability that drives the continuous improvement in business, and the same is true for our schools. Highly rigorous standards and assessments are critical to delivering quality education. The heightened expectations embedded in Colorado academic standards, not federal core standards, Colorado academic standards that you all put together after years of work, These are needed and are critical to delivering quality education. The heightened expectation embedded in the Colorado academic standards are the right thing for students, and make no mistake about it, they're the right thing for teachers. The business community applauds the adoption of the Colorado academic standards, and to include them as a part of academic standards. I'm incredulous to think that we would walk away from these standards, and the business community needs students who can achieve to them. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Cammy Hewlett. And then Barbara Hewlett follows Cammy.
I'll be back.
Okay.
I am a senior in high school, and I am a part of a parent-guided program that turned charter this year. And this year, I was put into an AP composition class, and the very first class the teacher told me that she didn't expect any of us to pass the test at the end of the year, and that she would not be teaching what would be on the test. Also, when I took the ACT last year, I first of all, I do not do well with tests, and so when I got my ACT score in the mail, I had to stand at the table for a little bit and tell myself that my score did not define me or define what I know or let it discourage me from what colleges I wanted to attend. And so please support the Moms Bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Barbara Hewlett.
Thank you, Mr. Lundin. We drove all the way from Montrose, so thank you very much.
Thank you for making the trip.
Allowing us this time. I am so saddened that this has become a political issue. As I researched every page of 212 and 191, both parties were involved. It set us up for Common Core. I just got off the phone just yesterday with my superintendent, with her assuring me that Common Core was the floor, not to worry about Common Core. It was the floor. So when we talk about these wonderful standards, remember Common Core is the floor. But it's much, much deeper than that. This is not about politics. It's about our children, parents, and citizens, of which you all have been elected to be our voice. As parents, we have worked on this bill, Democrats, Republicans, non-affiliates, and independents. And guess what? It was never a political issue. It was about our children. Because we didn't make it about politics, we continued to make it about our children. The unfortunate part about Common Core and PARC is it is about the money. 212 had to set that groundwork to get Race to the Top money. If you read all of 212, all of 191, and the Phase 3 application for Race to the Top money, you will understand why I make this statement. Now, back in... when I copied it, I didn't copy the date, but last summer, I sent a letter to CDE, and I don't think that each one of the members got it, but I asked for the bandwidth, and I never received all of those questions that I asked about the computers, the cost, the bandwidth. And also, as I studied Race to the Top, I see Melissa Colesman's name. I would like to know if she is funded her position to support Common Core, if that position is funded by Race to the Top money. I would also like to know if Carrie Markell's position is funded by Race to the Top money. Now, I can do a Quora on this, or...
Well, let me save you the time, no.
Neither one. So were those positions before?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Absolutely.
Okay, thank you. Mm-hmm. Please support our mom's bill. We all worked on it, all parties. This isn't about politics. It's about our children. Thank you.
Thank you. Anita Stapleton. We've got two more after this.
Thank you, Commissioner Hammond and State School Board, for this opportunity to speak. Last month, I showed, and I'm Anita Stapleton from Pueblo County. Last month, I shared with the board that I was discouraged and dismayed. Today, I am here to tell you I am encouraged and revived. I'm going to share a piece of non-approved, non-Common Core literature. No, it does not have profanity or pornography. Joshua 1:9. Have I not commanded you, be strong and courageous? Do not be frightened and do not be dismayed, for the Lord your God is with you wherever you go. Every month I try really hard to articulate some profound words that will stir an awakening in this elected Colorado school board. Something to lift the smoke so you all can see the continuous demise of our education system as a result of committing to the Common Core for the bribe money and all of its mandates. I graciously apologize, as I am reminded it is not me who can do this, but God. Today I can see God moving. We are gaining more grassroots citizens coming together to voice their concerns over Common Core. Homeschool parents and students raising their concerns as they see that soon all curriculum will be driven by the test, whether that be assessments or college entrance. Today I have with me letters of opposition to Common Core to enter into evidence. The first month I did this, we had 84. Today I have 437, with a total of 901 letters. Each day I receive more from concerned Coloradoans. This is God moving through our state. I also see God moving through the country. Out of 46 states who committed to Common Core, 30 are actively working to either pause the implementation, repeal it, or pull out of one part or the other, whether it be the data mining or the testing. 9 of 25 states have pulled out of PARC, with 7 currently working to do the same. This will drive the cost of PARC up. It takes 15 to meet that consortium criteria. Smarter Balanced is losing ground as well. Alaska, who joined Smarter Balanced in April of 2013 and adopted the math standards, is now winning out. I urge this school board to support Senate Bill 136. Colorado needs to develop an appropriate task force not influenced by special interest groups or bureaucrats. We need educators who have spent time in the classrooms and can bring their experience to the table. All levels of education need to be represented. Parents need to be part of this process as well. The reevaluation of the standards and the assessments needs to be done, keeping students, teachers, principals, and parents a priority. Colorado also needs to be more fiscally responsible by performing a thorough cost analysis of the standards and assessments and any instructional tools aligned. I have two demands for this board. First, I want to know, where did the $5 million go? The funds that were designated to establish administrative positions to help districts make smooth transitions to Common Core, I want evidence, factual dollars that have been spent. I also want to know what districts have received mentorship and which have not. Where are those cadres? I know some districts have been coddled, and I know my district, Pueblo 70, has not. I am furious that my students' instruction time has been cut by 30 minutes each day out of a 4-day school week so teachers can do their professional development. And I'm just about done.
Summary thought.
I am told that the union down in Pueblo has restrained the school and that they want $25 an hour to the teachers to finish their professional development.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Dr. George Walker. 3 minutes, George.
I'd like to react to some of the things I've heard here today. First of all, I'm George Walker, CU graduate, fourth generation graduate. I've been told I'm the first or only person of black and Cherokee Indian to run for governor. I ran as a Republican in 94. Colorado Public Radio this morning said this was a Republican effort that probably wouldn't go anywhere. Well, people are denying it's a Republican effort. First of all, to the best of my knowledge, we joined the consortium because the funds were not available to develop all these tests on our own. Second of all, if you want to delay the test, I think that might be a good idea if the Republican Party would pay for the extra time and money that would take. Because keep in mind, the Republican Party defeated the measure in 2011 by Senator Heath, and it defeated 66 last fall, and it defeated Lobato. If those measures had passed, we would have had enough money to do this right. So my opinion is that, you know, talking about it's not a Republican effort, I haven't noticed any other people look black in this room except for myself. I'd like to tomorrow be closely monitoring, talking to Ryan Cole, the chair of the Republican Party, about how many blacks, Native American Indians, Latinos, and Asians support calling back Common Core or delaying it for a year. Let's see if this has been made into a party issue. Let's see if it's a racial issue, because I've been talking to you for 4 years since 1910, telling you ever since 1920, blacks, Latino, Native American Indians have been telling you these tests are not valid, they're unfair, they're reliable, because the same groups of people end up on the bottom and the top. We've been telling you that, but you haven't listened, nothing personal. You haven't listened for 100 years. And now that Anglos are discovering that maybe they won't be able to control the curriculum and agenda like they used to, because the numbers of people of color is going up, they're getting scared. I respect their saying, we want our culture and our people recognized and valued. I like Ernest Hemingway. I met him in 1960. I took 2 semesters of Shakespeare. When you're passing for rights, you learn to test high. That's how I got in the CU, University of Minnesota Medical School, Connecticut graduate work. I learned the game. If you want to pass for right, go to operas, symphonies, ballets, plays, the classics. But I'm saying that isn't all there is. And so I'm going to try to push for, let's rescind this. Let's do it right. But Republicans, let's have some responsible funding. You're asking for champagne on a beer budget. We are still in the lowest quartile in this nation when it comes to state funding. So if you want it held up for a year, pay for it. Great-granddad George Washington Walker was the first black millionaire out of slavery in Kansas oil. He used to say all the time, talk is cheap, it takes money to buy land. Come up with the money.
Thank you, Dr. Walker. Deborah Singer.
Yes, sir.
And Deborah is our final speaker today.
I wanted to say thank you for all of you that stayed here, because I figured I wasn't going to say anything. I'm a concerned grandmother and mom. Colorado is my home. And I was a teacher's aide back in Hillsborough County in Florida many years ago. I got a chance to work with elementary school children and high school children. And one of the things that really struck me, I'm a creative individual. I've been a massage therapist for 21 years. I was a nurse's aide for 13 years, and during that time, there's a term we use, and I switch subjects very quickly because I know I want to get through this, is a word we use, contraindicative. It means that when you're in the medical profession or in the massage therapy industry, you ask questions about conditions a person has. Why? Because you don't want to hurt them. You want to make sure that the treatment or the massage you give them does them good. They get off the table, they leave the doctor's office, the hospital, whatever it is, that they are better for the treatment or massage they received. I personally, after investigating and reading and attending seminars about Common Core curriculum, the data mining and the PARC testing, I think it is contraindicative to the well-being of the children in our schools here in Colorado, and not only of Colorado, but I'm concerned about our nation. I love this country. I love the freedoms. I've spoken to people who come from other nations, and they're shocked at the violation of our freedoms that are taking place at this time and date. And you know what? I have a deep respect for every one of you. You're valuable people. You do something. You have something in you that obviously you want to serve this state and its educational excellence. I beseech you from my heart to consider every person who has spoken, those that are pro and those that are against Common Core curriculum. I think you have a conscience in all of you, and I say thank you for listening to your conscience and to your heart, and to realize I can't imagine that any of you, if you're not parents, you know people that are. Grandparents, parents, aunts, uncles, and you care for the children of this nation. I have a 10-month-old grandbaby. She lives in Georgia with her mom and daddy, my son and daughter-in-law. My son has served 12 years in the United States Air Force. And I got to tell you, I'm concerned about her in Georgia as well as the kids here in Colorado. God bless all of you, and may you sleep well tonight. And enjoy that apple pie, too.
Thank you very much. And unless there's other speakers, we're going to call it a day with that. So thank you all for coming out. We appreciate you coming and sharing your opinions. We will stand in recess until 9 a.m. tomorrow morning.